Octa Non Verba is a show that's raw and real, featuring hard-hitting interviews with people that live by the ethos of actions, not words. Marcus Aurelius Anderson is a TEDx speaker, best-selling author, veteran, and leadership and mindset coach. With this show, you get to join Marcus as he goes inside the minds and experiences of the world's most successful warriors, leaders, entrepreneurs, and experts. With each episode, you're going to get the philosophies, concepts, tactics, and strategies these leaders use to turn adversity into victory. Live an extraordinary life based on actions, not words. Now, here's your host, Marcus Aurelius Anderson.
Octa Non Verba is a Latin phrase that means actions, not words. If you want to know what somebody truly believes, don't listen to their words. Instead, observe their actions. I'm Marcus Aurelius Anderson, and my guest today truly embodies that phrase. Dr. Alex Spinoso, MD, is a physician, entrepreneur, and highly sought-after consultant and speaker in the medical industry. He is an industry-leading expert in growth and scaling multiple medical clinics, both cash-based and insurance, and building medical license practices, medical training programs, and online telemedicine companies as well. In addition, he owns multiple other direct-to-consumer retail businesses, commercial and family real estate, and helps run some of the most successful medical companies in the United States. He went to 8 figures in 16 months, and this man's journey is incredible. So glad that I got a chance to talk to you again. Thank you for being here today, my friend, Alex.
Thanks for having me on.
This has been a long time coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Marcus. It's been a while. This is great. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. And I've been watching your growth and your progress this entire time. I met you a while back and you talked to me on the phone. At that time, you were just a doctor, just a vanilla MD.
Right.
Just a doc, nothing special, right? At that time, you were working as a doctor in addition to doing other things as a doctor, trying to get some things together. So you have quite the entrepreneurial journey built into your backstory. Can you tell us a little bit of what that looked like for you at the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. Going about 4 years ago now, I was working in 4 different locations. So I was working for 3 urgent cares and I was working for a state prison in California. So California Department of Corrections on a general population yard, the baddest of the bad guys. And I started to listen to a podcast, MF CEO Project podcast, and started talking about, you know, owning your own business and wanting to do your own thing and go out and do your own thing. And at the time, I was looking at the jobs that I was in and thinking, you know what, I could do this. I don't want to work for anybody anymore. I have a serious problem with authority. I need to go out. I need to do something on my own. So I need to figure it the fuck out. And so I ended up listening to that podcast. And at the time, I owned a house. And with my girlfriend, we decided that, you know what, we're going to go for it. We're going to end up building our own business, no matter what that is. This is when we lived in California, Palm Springs at the time. So we ended up moving out of our house and renting the house for cash flow. We moved into the front foyer of a bedroom. So of a house, when you walk in, you know, there's usually to the left, there's like a movie room, and to the right, there's like a little dining room. So we lived in that little dining room. We called it the foyer, if you're from the Midwest. So we went and got big 10 by 10 sheets of plywood and laid them up against the walls. And that was our doors and our walls. And we had our mattress on the floor and everything that we owned in that little area. And it was 5 other people in the house, each had their own bedroom. So we lived there for 1.5 years and we slowly moved up from that foyer to, you know, one of the rooms that had a Jack and Jill bathroom to then the ensuite bathroom that was in the master before we finally moved out of there 1.5 years later. And I saved up my money. And I ended up actually dropping half of that money on a mastermind, the Arete Syndicate. And I remember sitting down with my wife and talking to her about it because it was about $50,000 the first year to get in it. And I told my wife, you know what, I don't know what is telling me to do this, but I mean, I got to do this. I think this is an amazing opportunity. I don't think I'll get an opportunity like this again. And she said yes. And that's why we're here. So I ended up joining the Arete. I met 2 or 3 incredible business partners. I ended up walking out of that the first year with 3 businesses. I had completely by that time left all 4 of my jobs, jumped 2 feet into CellSpark Regenerative Centers, which now is Genesis Lifestyle Medicine. And it's looking back, that's what it's been ever since then, just absolute growth from there, we've probably grown 300% every year since then.
Wow. That's just incredible. And so many people don't seem to understand that, again, jumping into this, going headfirst, being able to curtail your lifestyle. So many people don't live within their means or below their means, but to be in this place and then saying, no, we're going to get to that, this where we want to go by making that sacrifice now. Everybody knows that. Everybody hears that. What made you actually take action when everybody else is talking about it?
Getting extremely bored was the first thing. You know, working for the prison, you work 40 hours a week, and that's in quotations because when you work for the government, everybody knows that's about 16 hours of real work.
Yeah.
And in my profession, once you graduate, and it's, I think it's the same as lawyers or any other, we'll call it quote unquote high level degree where you have to go to school for a longer period of time. Once you get out of school, you've made it. You know, you're making six figures a year and you're living a comfortable life and you got your Mercedes and your mid-sized 600K home you can afford and you made it. That's the American dream, right? So it wasn't enough for me at that point. I was doing it for about 2.5 years until I really wanted to put a bullet in my head because I was just so tired of the same shit over and over and over. I wasn't being challenged. I wasn't growing. I wasn't being uncomfortable. You know, I had a beautiful girlfriend. I had a dog. I had a beautiful house and it was fucking horrible. I was just bored out of my mind and I knew there was more. And so that's why we really decided to do this. And we talked and said, you know what, there's got to be more to life than this. There's got to be more to life than this next, you know, 40 years of doing the same shit over and over and over. You know, I gotta do something. I gotta take a chance. I gotta grow so that I can help others as much as humanly possible. Not in the medical sense, but in the employment sense and, yes, and grow medical companies and things like that and provide for more people. So that was what really made me want to pull out of just the normal rat race of, hey, you made it. You're a doctor now. You're good. And start my own company.
And you also had an athletic background. You also were pushing yourself physically in many ways prior to even getting into med school, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I played competitive soccer and I played competitive rugby all through high school and then all through college. And then after high school or after college, when I graduated, I actually went to England for my first year of medical school just so I could play soccer at a semi-professional level over there. It really wasn't to go to med school. It was an excuse for my parents so I could go over there and play because they have very open rules for playing. So I played semi-pro there for a little bit and then decided that, you know, I had to choose one or the other, either continue with my athletics or continue with schooling. So I fell back into being a doctor. I didn't really even want to be a doctor at the beginning. It was just something I was really good at, school in general and getting good grades. And then once I graduated even from residency, I was doing bodybuilding competitions and high level nutrition coaching and stuff like that, blood work and things like that for a while before I realized that that lifestyle wasn't really contributing at all to the business growth or things like that.
Yeah. And the other thing too is, again, people, and we've seen this, especially in the media, especially over the last 3 years, especially after all the bullshit that happened in 2020, where people think if a person is a medical doctor, that one, they are essentially like this deity, they cannot be wrong, their word is law. And they don't understand that just a vanilla MD doesn't really have a whole lot. All they're doing is, I can identify what this is. Oh, that looks like a Pancoast tumor. I'm going to refer you out to a specialist. Here's some medications. Go home, drink some water. You'll feel better. Have some Tylenol. Call me in the morning. And you saw that quickly because you were living that at this like ceiling saying, that's it. Like, I thought there was more. I thought I'd be saving lives. I thought I'd be changing the world.
I completely agree. I think when you look into it, the research shows that medical school textbooks are about 20 to 30 years behind cutting edge medicine. So it takes about 20 to 30 years of what medicine comes out today, the research that comes out today, for it to actually get into a medical textbook to be actually researched and actually talked about in medical school. So we're already behind once we get out of medical school. And then in medical school, they don't teach you about nutrition. They don't teach you about balancing hormones. They don't teach you about anything to actually take care of yourself and stay healthy as you get older. They teach you, hey, a patient has these symptoms, here's a pill. A patient has these symptoms, here's a different pill. And so they teach you how to fix nothing but ailments, not actually prevent the diseases from happening. So it's a very screwed up and backwards way that we have medicine in the Western world in general. And the good thing about what came from the bullshit over the last 2.5 years is that people don't trust doctors, which is great. That's also a bad thing that people don't trust doctors. So it forces us to have to educate people more, but it also weeds out all the idiots, because those people who are just full of bullshit, those people that just want to give you a pill, those people that don't want to take care of you, it eliminated them from actually being able to take care of people, because people don't want to listen to that garbage anymore. They want to take care of themselves. They want to improve themselves. And so they'll look for people like our company or other companies that are doing those types of things.
When I was in chiropractic school before I joined the military, I remember getting pissed off that I had to take 3 levels of biochemistry. I'm like, this is out of my scope. I'm never going to be able to do anything, right? And they're like, well, you need it for boards. And I was like, that's still not good enough. And I remember talking to my professor, and he was like, he didn't even look up. I was like, why do we have to take this? He's like, it keeps stupid people out of your profession. And he just went back to grading his papers. And I was like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, that at least weeds those people out. But like you said, once you get out, the great thing for you, though, is because you saw that gap in the 20 or 30 years of what was actually coming out, that was your opportunity. And you were able to fill that niche in a way that not only needed a person of your drive, but a person of your expertise. Because as you said, we don't learn anything about those kind of things, even in med school, right?
Right, exactly. It creates a huge, pretty much blue ocean. I mean, there's a lot of people doing what we do, but there's a huge opportunity to really educate patients and improve them before they're actually getting sick, so that they live longer, they live healthier, and they live better.
Yeah, it's about preventative medicine. And what do we say? The person that is healthy wants a million things. The person that is sick wants only one.
Yep, 100%.
And you're giving them all that at one time. How long had you been dating your wife before you guys got married?
Oh, man, 5 years. I believe, before we actually got married, we've been dating. So this will be our, she says, 10-year anniversary. And I put it in quotations because we've only been married 5 years. This will be 5 years married, but we've been together for 10 years now.
Right. Congratulations on that. And
thank you.
And on your daughters.
Yeah, I have one daughter and I have two sons. So I have triplets.
Triplets.
Yeah, two boys and a girl, Leonardo, Giovanni, and little Isabella. So it's amazing.
Those amazing names, right?
So we had to go full Italian names. It's Giovanni Luigi and Leonardo Enzo and Isabella Sophia. So,
oh, that's great. And the thing too is I wanted to kind of highlight that, because how many women find a doctor, marry him, and say, okay, I'm all set. And then he goes, no, but we have to roll this back. Now we're going to actually downsize. I'm going to actually work more. I'm going to spend less time with you. But that showed the resilience that you guys had together to get to the place that you are right now. Because without that partner as an entrepreneur, I don't think people talk about it enough, but it's like that, if you have that partner that's pulling you back or pissed off that you're working past five or doesn't understand why you're talking to this person or why you're doing the things you're doing, it's literally just going to be a drain on all of your, every faculty that you have.
Right. No, 100%. I mean, she has been my rock and my supporter since day one, like my biggest fan, honestly. So, I mean, she was the one that got me into or pushed me to do the RHA Syndicate. I applied and I asked her, hey, can we spend this much money, you know, half our life savings that we had for a business on this? And she said, yes. She has moved with me across the country. She's moved with me from state to state, house to house, rental to rental. And now that we're in our house now, it's amazing. But she has been there every single step of the way, and you know, has picked me up. And they have that saying in comic books, like, who watches the watchman? And it's pretty much been, you know, Steph. She's been my supporter the entire time and been picking me up. And days that I'm like, man, I don't think I can do this anymore, she's the one who's like rooting for me and supporting me, my biggest fan by far. And that doesn't mean it's all sunshine and rainbows. We definitely fought for a long fucking time, the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of us together and even of our marriage, the first couple of years. But you know, after a while, you just stop fighting over stupid shit, like who's going to take out the trash can or why you didn't take out the trash can. And things get much fucking better after that. So yeah, after 10 years, gentlemen, she's right. Just say yes, dear, and then do whatever the fuck you were going to do before. But that's how you placate that. But yeah, no, she's been my number one supporter and definitely has pushed me to be where I am today. We wouldn't be where we are today if she hadn't said yes that day, for sure.
That's it. And what does she do? She makes you want to be a better doctor, a better provider, 100%. A better father, a better husband, a better entrepreneur, a better leader, frankly. Because doing what you're doing, you can't just be an entrepreneur. You have to be leading. You have to be at the very tip of the spear. You have to be at the front of the pack. And as we know, as Andy would always say, right, they're only going to go to about 75% of where you are at whenever you're showing up every day. So you can't expect everybody to be at the level that you are, but yet you can still give that kind of residual energy to them to get there.
Yep, 100% agreed.
And there's something else too. I think that people forget how important being very honest with ourselves are as entrepreneurs, because we're dealing with very real problems in real time. And you've put out some really great content. And I love what you're talking about. Can you tell me the worst piece of advice that you hear continually echoed in the entrepreneurial space?
Oh God, there's such a giant list of that.
You can just go and I'll just write whatever it is.
Oh shit. There's such a list of that. So you're going to have your normal cliches like team, no sleep. That's a big one where, hey, you know, you don't,
team no sleep,
you don't, hashtag team, no sleep. You don't need to sleep. You know, The Rock only sleeps 4 hours a night. Yeah. But it's probably in some like cryogenic chamber that's like perfectly optimized for his sleep and pumps in oxygen. So he's extremely rested for those 4 hours a day. And he's got, you know, optimized growth hormone and which we all obviously know, and testosterone and all that stuff. So team no sleep is bullshit. You know, I get 7 to 8 hours a night, no matter what. It helps me. I don't wake up to an alarm. I wake up when I can. Obviously, I've worked to that point where I can, but I have been on the other side of it where I've been on team no sleep and I put myself in the hospital 4 times over a course of 2 months. Burning the wick at both ends, getting dehydrated, having symptoms of stroke, having issues with walking because my body was just exhausted and crapped out. So that team no sleep is definitely something that I hear everywhere. The other thing is the 80-20 rule, I think, is actually a pretty good rule where, you know, 80% of what you do during the day or 80% of your income is going to come from you doing your regular everyday job. And then 20% of your income is going to be from your side hustle. You know, 40 hours a week is not enough for a job. 50 hours a week is not for a job. So if you're doing that, 40 hours, 50 hours a week, great. You need to be working 20 hours a week on your own thing. If you want to do your own thing or work 20 hours a week on improving yourself in your own job so that you are getting more income in your own job. So I think that's one of the things that people talk about that's also actually decent, but a lot of people like to flip it the other way around where they say, hey, you know, 20% of your work is really going to give you 80% of your results. And that's a Pareto principle thing.
Right.
And I think if you're just really logical about where you put your energy, you can increase that 20% and flip it to where 80% of the things that you work on is going to produce 80% of your income. It's just that 20%, you're always going to have to be working on things, tweaking things, improving things on that end.
And the people that we see that are preaching that, like you say, they've been doing that, what you're saying, for years. They've got the compounding interest of doing that for years. So like Andy was saying, it was like, you did this today, great. Now do it for the next 15 years, because all the people that we see that are successful, that we are influenced by or byproducts because of, are just further down the line in that thing. And they've just been doing it day in and day out, just monogamous to making sure that they can move the chains at least once a day.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I catch myself because I've only been doing this like 3.5 years now and almost 4 years in the entrepreneurship world. And I have friends that I sit down and they've been doing it. My business partner's been doing it 10 years. You know, Andy's been doing it 24 years. You have these guys that are doing it 30, 40 years. And you think, man, I literally am a baby when it comes to learning. So when it comes to that, learn as much as you can. And every conversation that you can get into, whether it's somebody who's making more money or less money than you, shut the fuck up and listen. And they'll usually teach you one or two lessons that you can absolutely apply to your company. And that's one of the biggest things that I try and do in my companies, but just in talking with other people, is like, what are the lessons they learned and what are the things that they learned in life that can apply to business? And I write those down and I have it all set up and I think of how those things can consistently be applied in our companies. And that's what sets us apart in our companies.
Well, it sets you apart specifically as an individual. I remember back in those days that you were the one that was taking all the notes. You were the one that was like, hey, this is what I found. Hey, I've got this all done. And what people don't understand is, because of your education, that's what you had to do to process
right.
to make it something that you would actually understand. So when I went to the last RT Syndicate event a couple of months ago with David Goggins and Andy and Ed, it broke my heart that I was one of the few people that was actually writing things down. And listen, if you're going to pay that kind of money and you're not going to write stuff down and you just want to feel like you can run through a wall after 5 minutes, and then that now you say hi to all your friends, it's like, man, you can write notes and still do all that stuff. You can write down the most significant things that punched you in the face right then and still go do all that stuff, right? I mean, again, everybody's, I want the 7 steps of this or the 3 steps of that. It's like, why? You're not even applying the shit that you already know. Why are you not executing on what you're doing? Because that's what got you in 16 months to the eight figures on what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. Exactly. The biggest separator is going to be speed of execution. If you cannot execute and plan to fail, you're going to fail. That's the biggest thing, is that people don't do it because they think they're going to fail. Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. You're going to fucking fail. But it could be little failure. It could be a catastrophic. Most of the time, it's not a catastrophic failure. Those catastrophic failures are most of the time in your mind. But you think, okay, I'm going to fail at some point, and when I get there, we're going to fix it. We're going to go into this a different direction, and we're going to be solution focused. We're not going to worry about all the other bullshit in the aspect of things, because you're going to fail. You're going to improve. And if you're not failing, you're not growing.
It's the truth. And also, we can spend as much time writing out the business plan or whatever the mission is all day, but until we take that first step, we have no clue where we stand in that. I mean, we may have to redraw everything after that first step, or we take that first step and go, oh, now that I have a better perspective, I can go faster in this process. But again, having that patience to write the right thing down is fine, but going out, not being afraid to fall down. I think that every entrepreneur that I've spoken to, or any successful author, when I spoke to Stephen Pressfield, he was saying that his first book that actually got published after 27 years of being an abject failure, as he would say, I was like, I don't think you're a failure, but he wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Yep.
That puts him on the map, gets made into a movie, and then they say, what's your next one going to be? He's like, oh, it's going to be called Gates of Fire, about the Battle of Thermopylae. And people are like, the what? But that's what he wanted to do, and that's what he had to be willing to do, to fall down to get to that place. And now he's one of the most prolific writers of our time.
Yep, absolutely.
Just going in and doing the work like that. So we talked about the worst piece of advice that you hear continually repeated.
Yeah.
What is a truth that you know to be true that most people do not understand or do not believe?
These are such great questions, by the way, Marcus. These are phenomenal questions. They really make you think. Wish I would have been tested before. I really think that one of the biggest issues that I see in the personal development and the entrepreneurship world is going to multiple different events, like we talked about, even writing the notes down, reading multiple books, listening to podcasts in the car, and people not applying or applying just a little bit and thinking that they're learning a lot and that they're doing a lot because they've read or been, you know, widely educated on so many different things. Yeah. And I wholeheartedly believe that I think there's probably five things that I take information from total, and that I keep taking things from total, that I have enough to build a $1 billion business if I just continue to take from these same five resources. So I don't need to read more books. I don't need to listen to more podcasts. I don't need to do more things, because if I just go back and listen to those five things, or read, you know, what's part of those five things, then I can build a $1 billion company. And that's what I've done. So I have probably 30, 40 books on my bookshelf. And it's because once I read a book, I probably spend a good 6 months applying as many of the principles in that book to my business and to my life before I move on to the next one. And so it takes forever. So really, over the past 4 years, I've read like 30, 40 books total, but I've applied as much as I could in those books. And then when I feel like I'm crapped out or need to go to the next lesson, I go back and read some of the books, or I go back to my highlights in those books and realize what the next step is. So, I mean, my things are the MF CEO Project podcast. There's like 300 and something episodes. I just go back and listen to those again. I mean, they were created by a guy who runs a multi-billion dollar company. And there's just a pathway to how you should do it and how you should build it, every part of the company. So I go back and I listen to those again. I read How to Win Friends and Influence People. So that's a very good one about meetings and learning and things like that. I read The Magic of Thinking Big. I'm looking at my bookcase right now.
Yeah.
The Magic of Thinking Big, because that always gets me into the mindset of things. And I read Built to Sell, which is a great book about scaling, building and scaling a business to sell. And then on top of that, I might read or look at or learn specific niches. Let's say I want to negotiate a contract. I'll read something or listen to something from like Roland Frazier or Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Otherwise, I don't add more information, because for me, it's just too much information. And I know if I go back and just apply the concepts in those books and anything around EOS, because our business is based off EOS as well. Yep. I know if I read and just apply those books, what's in those books over and over and over, you can scale those things to the next level. So that's one thing that I know to be true, where you don't need 1,000 different things. You don't need in-person events plus podcasts plus books, other interviews. You don't need 1,000,000 of those things. You need to choose like 4 or 5 and just apply them to your business until they're tapped out. And then go read the next 4 or 5 books at the next level and apply those to your business or your life or your relationship until they're tapped out, and then go to the next level.
I couldn't agree more. That's everything. Knowledge that is acquired but unutilized is the equivalent of ignorance. It doesn't help me to know a bunch of shit that I can't apply. It's like being a martial artist that has 1,000 techniques, but I can't really perform them in the heat of battle, because once the adrenaline dumps in my body, all my motor skills go to shit. I'm just going to default to what I'm most comfortable with. So Bruce Lee said, I don't fear the man that knows 10,000 techniques. I fear the man that knows one technique that's performed it 10,000 times. And what you're talking about is that's why you didn't read as many books. You don't have to. You're trying to actually apply it and learn it and master it. And once you find that mastery in one sphere, you see it everywhere. And then just like what you're saying, now it dovetails. Now it's this Venn diagram of, oh, this is what Voss was talking about over there. Oh, I can apply it in this negotiation. Not only the negotiation, but understanding the buyer's mentality and EOS. And how does that affect my rocks? Where does that come over in all these areas? So when we see that, we can start to apply it in everything. And then that gives us, because you're a unique individual, that gives you a tactical advantage compared to all the other people that are still trying to follow the, you know, A plus B equals C formulaic idea. And they have no capacity to pivot. They have no capacity to fall back, to go back to the drawing board without this feeling of, oh, I failed. That's part of the process, people. That's it.
Yep, exactly.
It's everything. A lot of things that you're doing with your business, you talked about getting to the cause as opposed to trying to do the symptomatology. Tell us about what your business is, what your clinics are doing, and how that's kind of revolutionizing what everything is going on at Genesis.
Yeah, absolutely. So I own and operate Genesis Lifestyle Medicine, and as well as some other subsidiary and partner companies at this time. Genesis Lifestyle Medicine is really focused on treating the body from the inside out. So keeping you healthy and as optimal as possible as you age. So everybody says aging is normal. Aging is not normal. You're fucking dying, and your organs are dying, and your telomeres are shortening. And so that's what aging is, you slowly dying. And so we slow that process down and extend it to as long as humanly possible, doing things like optimizing hormone therapy levels, optimizing, you know, vitamin and IV therapies. We do also things on the outside, Botox and fillers and fat reduction and hair transplants to make you look better on the outside and feel better, which has scientific proof that it makes you perform better, work harder, you know, sleep better, have sex better, all of those things. So we help people on the inside and on the outside. So as you age gracefully, you age to where you can actually perform better as you get older. When you have more money and you're able to do more things, you're actually more and more, I want to say, optimized throughout your entire life, not just your health, but also your home life, your workout, your sex life, etc.
And so for the average male entrepreneur, let's say, where is their testosterone level by comparison to where it probably should be if they want to be optimal?
So with testosterone levels, usually around the age of 35 is when your testosterone levels really start to drop off the cliff. And we blame it on usually having young kids, because that's around the time people have kids or have young kids. Same with females around age 40. It's the same thing. They have young kids, or they blame it on their kids, or they blame it on work, or, you know, all the stressors in life. They happen really in your 30s. That's when you start to get hit with real stress. You're out of school long enough to realize you got to pay for shit, but you're too young to be like, oh, I'm set up. That's like the struggle decade. You're in your 30s that I'm in. Yes. So that's when your hormones start to really lower and go off the deep end. And that's the most important time to get your hormones checked, because usually testosterone levels are, you know, 200, 300, 400 levels points before below what they should be in males. And for females, that's a much smaller amount, 20 to 30 points below, but still significant for females and males, that if you start to optimize those, you're starting to feel better, sleep better, you're starting to get more rest, and ability to perform during the day is significantly changed with that testosterone optimized, both in males and females. Most people say, well, you're a female, you don't need testosterone. That's bullshit. They also need it in order to be able to function and to be able to have their energy and metabolism right and everything like that.
Well, that helps them with their estrogen balance as well, or increase for the females, right? And that helps them with
100%
from skin to, like you said, intimacy, everything. And it's all connected. And I'm saying that because there are probably a lot of people that are listening to us that are either leaders or young entrepreneurs that don't understand that maybe they do feel tired, or again, they're not sleeping well. And if they could get these things balanced out, or at least look into it, at least get it checked, that gives them this potential, again, tactical advantage where now they can go more. And you were saying also that with you, like, you're sleeping 7 to 8 hours, and when you're doing things in any, I mean, you have all these multiple businesses, so you have multiple teams you're in contact with, all these things that are coming in, you're looking at your sales and all your reports and everything. But I'm imagining that you're attacking these things in these short sprints with the knowledge of I'm going from here to here, and now you can go through all the way with it. So almost like with a workout, if we're doing 20 sets of something, there's no way I can be optimal in really any of those sets. Maybe two or three I can, but after that, I'm losing it. So for you, you're being very specific and intentional to give that focus, to give that energy to those things, so that now when you do sleep at night, like Andy says, right, it's that aggressive patience. It's like, I did everything I could today. I know I did. I didn't fuck around. I wasn't doing stuff I wasn't supposed to do. And now I can sleep well. And then when you have your hormones where they need to be, and now when you're having nutrition where it needs to be, and now when you're actually making these strides, it becomes more obvious, because in the middle of the ruck march is the hardest. The beginning, you're kind of hyped up. And when you're near the end, you understand. But in the middle, that's when it can be pretty fucking brutal.
Yep. 100%. You're 100% right. You know, optimized hormones helps you rest. It helps you control stress better. You know, everybody says, well, won't you have roid rage? No, not when your hormones are optimized. You'll actually be able to control stress better. You'll be able to think clearer. And like you said, at the end of the day, you'll be way more successful during the day. So at the end of the day, when you sleep, you can sleep better and you'll be more rested.
And that's why I think a lot of entrepreneurs or leaders specifically have that anxiety, because they feel like there's still this thing that they haven't been able to take care of. And they either don't have the energy, the focus, or they're just like, I just don't have the time to deal with that right now. And then they push it to the side and they push it to the side. And the more they push it to the side, eventually they just start, their world starts to revolve around that thing that they're just continually pushing to the side that they're not going to face. So the answer that we seek is found in the adversity that we are currently avoiding. And if that's what your entire life is, then you're going to have about 50 years of unhappiness.
100% correct.
So you went to 8 figures in 16 months.
Yep.
Tell us what that initial success felt like for you, and then how you were able to still check yourself to be able to redouble your efforts to move to the next level.
Well, once we got there, honestly, I'll tell you the truth, we didn't really even know that we were there. I mean, we got the P&Ls for the 16-month mark, and we're like, oh, cool, we hit 8 figures. Well, back to work. Because it wasn't really for me, there's always the next level. And a lot of people say that's unhealthy. But look, I'm trying to build a billion-dollar fucking brand, and I'm trying to build multiple billion-dollar brands. And I'm trying to, you know, get on the, you know, top 40 richest people under 40 list on Forbes, even though I think Forbes is bullshit. But I'm trying to get on these lists. I'm trying to do these things, because the more I do them, people ask, well, when is enough enough? It's never enough. It's never enough for me, because if I get more money, and if I have more money, I can help more people. That means I have more employees. That means more people are being fed. That means more people are having great jobs instead of shitty jobs in the medical field. That means, you know, if I'm coaching other companies, because I coach other companies outside the medical field now, and they're scaling, that means they're paying more people. That means they're growing. That means my friends, they say, you know, it's lonely at the top. It's fucking not. All my friends are multimillionaires, and there's a lot of them, and they all want other people to succeed as much as they do. You just got to be really hungry and be willing to get kicked in the nuts over and over and over and over for it. So that's really what brings me back to that point where it's all the money that I get, I usually put it out back into other businesses or growing my business. So that's what keeps me in that, like, oh, I need to continue to work phase where all the money I'm getting is consistently going back into the business and growing the business to that next level. And that requires me to level up because I am consistently building a business that I have never built before. And the size of my company is bigger than it's ever been before. So I'm constantly having to level up my skills or look for people who can help me level up the skills of the business because I've never done this before. So I'm consistently putting myself into a situation where I don't know what I'm doing, which kind of sounds terrible, but I live in comfort in not knowing what the fuck I'm doing and having to figure it out every single day and looking for people that can help me get to that level every single day. So that's what really helps me go back. And I consistently think of the places that I've lived. Obviously, that front foyer, I've lived in attics, I've eaten out of trash cans. I'm consistently putting my mind back to that because I'm afraid of going back. I don't want to go back. And that's maybe something that's slightly unhealthy, but it drives me. That darkness drives me. And that fuck you to all those people who didn't believe in me also drives me.
There's a reason why we have these emotions. There's a reason why we have anger. It's a gift. It's an opportunity for us to use it if we're willing to do it. And the people that we find that are being, you know, oh, anger is this bad thing. Not being able to control your anger is a bad thing. You can still be, like you said, having that chip on your shoulder and now leverage that anger to push you. When I was in those dark places, when I was paralyzed, when I was injured, when I was mad, like I had to find something to use that, to get that out. But again, if you're like with the Ruckmarsh analogy or trying to get through this last shift and you're just trying to push on, sometimes the only thing that you have to drive you is anger. And if you're unable to harness it correctly, it will turn into a horrible master for you. So we have to be aware and say, okay, how can I leverage this anger? How can I tactically, surgically put it right here for this moment and now turn it back off? So almost like the analogy of a non-dangerous man is not somebody that's worthwhile. It's like it's a dangerous man that can control it. And you being able to be in this position of saying, I had this healthy fear, but you're able to put it in this place and say, this is actually going to serve me and help me get better with everything that I'm doing. And I think that that's something that's often overlooked. People look at Relentless or they look at these other people and they say, oh, this is unhealthy. If you saw those people and you could actually talk to them and you knew who they were and you saw what got them there, you would understand that they have done all this same work that all these people on the other side of aisle are always talking about, but they're not just allowing themselves to sit in that mediocrity and then be fine with it once they get to a certain level of success.
Right. The hero's journey is the hero's journey. And so for those that don't know what the hero's journey is, it's a way to write a story in prose. And they say that the hero has the same exact story as the villain. It's just the decisions that you make, whether you become a hero or a villain. So it's really on you and your decisions. And once you realize that everything that comes around in your life is as a result of your decisions, it opens up your eyes a lot to what's capable.
It does. And we were talking earlier about how people don't talk about their failures enough. Maybe they feel embarrassed. Maybe they feel that, I mean, my whole idea was talking like, I'm injured, I'm paralyzed, I finally recover. And at 41, I'm like, now what the hell do I do with my life? I have neuropathy in my hands, I can't adjust, I can't go back to school. So what do I do? And in Mastery, Robert Greene says, when you don't know where to begin, go back to the beginning. And I just went back to martial arts, philosophy, physicality, and that fed me to push me in this direction. So embracing that adversity was what I had to do, not because I was brave, but because I had no other fucking choice. And mm-hmm. lots of times we hit something difficult and we get away from it like a child. But if you have to sit with it and you accept it for what it is, while the wound is open, you can learn a lot about yourself. I've never met a person that's at a high level in anything that has not gone through adversity. In fact, it's usually a direct correlation to the adversity they've gone through and they've been able to channel and use. Can you tell us about an adversity or a failure that you went through in your life that at that time you didn't know if you were going to get through it? You didn't know how you were going to get through it or what it would look like. But once you were through it, you came back and you were like, wow, that shaped the man that I am today.
Yeah, I'll actually tell you one more recently, honestly, because I think not a lot of people talk about their failures in business. And this just happened a few months ago where, you know, we had to close, my business partner and I, we ended up having to close, I think, about 8 companies in general across the country. And the reason why we did it is because they, not that they were failing miserably, but they weren't succeeding at the same level that we needed them to. So they were kind of just paying their bills. They weren't paying any dividends, which would allow us to grow those corporations. So they were just stagnant. And it was consistently having to work the staff, consistently having to try and fix things in those locations. And I knew at some point we were going to have what's called a pruning of the tree, where you got to prune the business in order for the business to grow. I didn't think it would really happen to me because we were doing so well. But the problem was that we expanded way too fast and didn't really focus on what our niche was. And we ended up reaching out into some areas of businesses that we could make okay, but not highly successful.
Right.
And so what we had to do is we had to cut, you know, 8 companies out of our repertoire, dropping us below 40. We had mid-40s in terms of companies, and we dropped below 40 to be, we're mid-30s in terms of locations and companies now. And it was, for me, it cut out a lot of income from having those. And it was like, you know what, I got to go back to the drawing board. But also at that same thing, it was a blessing because it would allow me to breathe and free up my time, because those 8 companies were causing the most problems in all of the companies. So I was focusing on those 8 companies like they were 90% of my income and 90% of the problems, because that's what they were in terms of the problems, not in terms of the income. So it was amazing when we cut those, how much time it freed up for me to really focus on growing and expanding the other companies. And the other companies doubled in income overnight. So pretty much I replaced my income within 60 days that we had lost from losing those companies, because I focused heavily on what we had, making our systems and our incomes better for those businesses. Yes. And then also working on some businesses that I wasn't able to get time to work on because I was consistently putting out fires over here. So there are some times in every business owner's life where you got to start looking at different aspects of your business and whether they are truly harming or helping you, and saying, you know, I'm focused on this every single day or every other day as a problem. If I cut this, how much will it hurt me? But also at the same time, maybe if it hurts me, like it hurt me 40% of my income, okay, how can I replace that 40% of my income the fastest way possible with these other things that I'm doing? You might be able to scale out these other 60% of your income extremely fast because you're not worried about every day this other part of your business breaking. So that was a huge adversity that helped me open my eyes. And I had read it in a book, actually, Charlie Munger wrote, and him and Warren Buffett have a rule that if they have an issue with a new partner or a new business within the first 30 to 45 days, and something, they just get a bad feeling or something irks them, or the business partner says something wrong within the first 45 days, then they end that business completely and they move on. And they say that has been the biggest contributor to their success. And it was kind of the same thing with my business partner and I, where it's like, okay, if we're focused on this every single week or every other day, or even twice a month, it's consistently causing problems that we have to fix, then it's probably better for us to cut that out completely and focus on the things that are going really well and growing the shit out of those.
That's an excellent KPI, right? I mean, and what do we have to do? We have to put our ego to the side, because sometimes we will just allow the ego to say, oh, we just need one more month or next quarter, or we're just going to push, or what if we put some more, you know, resources into that. Yeah. And like you said, we don't want to admit that we're failing. How can we possibly fail? We're doing so well. But being able to come back and actually be honest and say, actually, my mental capacity is being reduced. That's the KPI I need to look at. That's huge. Yep. And most people don't have the balls or the wherewithal to look at that. They can't see it.
Yeah, it was definitely a punch to the gut, where you're like, okay, these companies are doing $5-6 million gross a year combined, but they're really not contributing to our EBITDA, the growth, and where we want to go as a company. So we have to let them go. I was like, fuck. But it really opened up our eyes to, damn, that we should have done that earlier. This is great.
There was that analogy that Tim Ferriss uses, where he says, you don't have to make it back the same way you lost it. So for you, like you said, these other niches and looking at opportunities, it's like, well, we tried that. We tested the waters, but this is our bread and butter. This is what we own. This is what we're the best at. Why the hell are we spending time, money, resources on this other thing that may or may not even be what we want to do?
That's exactly.
and to be at that the level that you're at now and still be able to have that, how do you keep yourself so grounded into the like into the trenches with everybody? Because where you're at, obviously, there's no way that you can keep your finger on the pulse all the time.
A couple different things that we do actually in all of our companies. I make sure that I meet weekly with the leaders of the companies that I own. So make sure that we have a 15-20 minute Zoom just to check in. I'm consistently texting them or checking in with them. I may do a lot of manage by walkabout. So every quarter, nice. I'll try and visit almost every single location or company and talk to the people on the ground level and in the middle management that might be not be able to reach me or talk to me. Although they do all have my cell phone still. They do all have my email. And I do create an open door policy in our companies where even the janitor can come and talk to me if they have a problem. I encourage that. And it hasn't gotten to the point where it's ridiculous because some people will say, well, that, you know, people may abuse that. And I've never had a person abuse that because we have the core values in place. People understand and they only come to me when there's a serious problem going on because they know the hierarchy of who they should go to get other problems fixed. So really, I haven't had that issue where people are abusing it. And it's been phenomenal. It creates an open door. People are comfortable in the system. They're comfortable approaching the CEO and, you know, my business partner, my co-founder, Brent Messer, about things. And so that's kind of how we have ran our companies and stay grounded in the lower levels. But then we allow our leaders to be leaders. And if there's a question that somebody comes to us and it really isn't a big deal, we'll point them towards those leaders and say, hey, such and such can take care of that for you. Or even our leaders will point them to other leaders. Hey, you know, talk to your other leaders, the other managers. You have 13 of them. You definitely have plenty of people to talk to find out that answer without coming to Brent or I. So that allows Brent or and I to focus on the business and making those connections of what we call selling our business, not selling our service, meaning that we're going out, shaking hands, creating these associations with people who can help us in strategic relationships and partnerships and things like that, allowing the business to get bigger rather than, oh, I'm selling a hormone therapy to this one person. We have the staff do that. So that's kind of how we stay grounded and connected in all of our companies is just consistent checking in, consistent Zoom calls, things like that.
Yeah. And I think that's so key. You being able to take that time to walk the property, you're creating your presence. You're actually there and you get to see what it's like there on the ground. And what does that do? That builds that leadership capital, so to speak, to show them it's like, hey, he actually gives a shit. He's not just up there counting his money, wahahaha, looking at the P&L and trying to figure right. out, look at this person over yeah. here that's making 50 cents more than what he was. That's not what we do. That's not going right. to let you get where you want to go. And you're still very coachable in the process of doing that.
Absolutely.
What is the biggest question you've had to answer from somebody that kind of caught you off guard as the leader in this position?
I don't think the biggest question. I think the biggest problem that I didn't see earlier was the fact that many times your staff members will need more guidance than you actually believe that they need. And so as you scale and as you expand, I highly recommend, obviously, you're doing standard operating procedures for every single thing that you do. Every single part of your company should have standard operating procedures, from how to greet somebody at the door to how to bring them back to how to sell a certain product, et cetera. Because what I was finding out and what their KPIs are. We talked about KPIs earlier. What is their goal and how does their goal fit into your goals? And how does what they're doing fit into the giant overall encompassing goal of and vision of your company? Because a lot of times people will just be like, well, I'm pressing this button all day long. You know, what happens if I stop? Like nothing's going to happen. And it might be like the button resets, you know, the timer on the bomb that's going to blow up the entire fucking company if they don't keep yes. pressing that button. So telling them, well, you probably have the most important job in this company because you're pressing the button that keeps us all alive. You know, obviously that's an extreme case, but telling everybody why they're doing something so that they understand why and they have an idea of, okay, how does this affect my paycheck? How does this affect my life? How does this affect the company? And how is it going to help us all as a group grow? Because that's one of our core values, is definitely teamwork, making sure that we're providing the best customer service and we're all seeing eye to eye when it comes to those types of things. So that's very important for every single person in my companies to know why they're doing something and how that fits into the grand scheme of things. Because all of us entrepreneurs who are making seven figures, eight figures a year, I always say Amazon still needs people to pack boxes. You know, they have robots, but if every human that worked for a giant company like Amazon or Apple walked out the fucking door, it would crush those companies. Crush those companies. And especially, you know, mid-sized businesses like ours, it would crush us. You know, if we didn't have any people, we are a healthcare company. If we don't have any humans, I guess we could do, you know, robots via telemedicine, but it's going to crush the company. So you still can't do robotic Botox and fillers and stuff like that, or, you know, hormone therapy robotic yet. So realize as a business owner that your people are your most important asset. And, you know, the client's not always right. Your people are right 99% of the time. And you need to realize that and support them first. And then the client comes second, because if you don't take care of your own, you're not going to have any business because they're going to walk out the door.
Yeah, our employees are our most important customer oftentimes. And then I love your idea about the SOP. Andy always talked to us about the checklist manifesto, right? Yep. Understanding how, again, we assume, because you're educated not only as a doctor, but as a business person, and then personal development and physically. So there's a lot of knowledge that you have that you feel may be common knowledge. But until we make this person understand, this may not be as common knowledge. And again, how they fit into the grand scheme of this thing. Now, what does that do? That gives them not only autonomy, but it also gives them this connectedness, this ownership of this thing. They take pride in what they want to do. They see how significant that thing is, as opposed to, like you're saying, just hitting a button or creating a widget.
Yeah. And humans are inherently good. Look, there are very, very, very few people on earth who go to their job with the intention of fucking it up. So right. Even though you might have an employee where you're just looking at them like, can you get any stupider? It's because they believed 99% of the time that they were doing the right thing, or they thought that that was the right thing. So sometimes as a business owner and as a manager, it's hard to step back and realize that. But realize that person probably 99% of the time had good intentions. If they had bad intentions, you probably wouldn't even be able to get them in the same room because they'd be gone, really. So if they're still standing in front of you, they had good intentions. So finding out where the breakdown was that caused them to do X, because there was something that happened before that caused them to do that in that specific way. And how do you fix that so it doesn't happen again?
And you're looking at all these businesses and you're wanting to get to this multi-billion dollar level, which I love that drive. And once you reach that first eight figures, like you said, that was sort of the threshold. What allows you to look bigger? What allows you to start seeing what directions to go into to start pushing in those? I mean, we just talked about how those six clinics before that we had to, you know, curtail back. What allows you to still continue to move forward to drive in that area with the vision?
So I listen to, and I can't remember the podcast, but I now teach it to everybody that I talk to in the entrepreneurship world, is that you should draw your business like a Venn diagram or a spider web. So at the beginning should be your company. And then around your company should be all of the different companies that are required for you to do your service. So for a medical company, hey, we have a pharmacy that we have to order meds from. We have a telephone company that we have to answer the phones from. We have a marketing company that drives in leads. We have a blood work company that helps read our blood work out. We have a telehealth company that we can do medications and stuff online. We have supplements that we can sell in the clinics. So all those things, we are paying other people to provide that service. So once we grow and we get big enough, we buy or create a strategic partnership or ownership in all of those companies. So now we have our own marketing company and our own CRM. We have our own telehealth corporation. We have our own pharmacy. We are working on this year our own blood work company. So we are focused on owning and operating all of the arms of the spider web, so that we are a self-sufficient ecosystem. And so this company is paying this company, and they're all paying each other in a little menage a trois of money, and you own all three of those companies. So it's the same, and this could be applied to any operation. Like, oh, I sell garage doors for a living. Okay, well, what about manufacturing garage doors, or manufacturing the coating for garage doors, or manufacturing the insulation for garage doors? Or even if you don't have a manufacturing plant, creating a strategic partnership where you get a little bit of money back for recommending certain services or certain windows or certain insulation. or certain tracks, you know, certain motors. Yes. There's all the ability to buy and be self-sufficient in your own company as you grow. And everybody's like, well, when I get money, I'm going to invest it in crypto, or I'm going to invest it in real estate, or I'm going to invest it in bot. Just invest it in another vertical of your business that lowers the amount of money you're spending in the current business, increases your EBITDA, which increases your take home, but also you get a piece of whatever this company is doing now as well. So you're increasing your income by just doing the business that you're currently doing. This is why I don't do any other business other than medical businesses. And I coach and I take consulting. I do consulting for equity in other people's companies because that's what I know. I know growing companies and I know growing medical companies. So I just stick in that niche, and there's plenty of work to do in any niche. There's always competitors you can buy. There's always competitors you can partner with. There is an infinite amount of people in your service, in your niche, doing what you're doing that you can partner with or purchase on your way to $1 billion.
And I think that that's a huge thing. And you talked about that, how that these people that are like competitors for you, go out, get to know them. Go have a drink. Go take them out to dinner. Go to an event. You have that connection. You never know what that can lead to. You never know what opportunities that could provide. And if nothing else, it reduces like any unnecessary friction that may be there at the moment. Because in the future, you never know when this person can help you, when you can help them, and how that can eventually, the ROI is unending, as you're saying.
Yeah. Or acquire them. I mean, there's a lot of business owners now that are getting older, and not a lot of their sons, daughters, family want to take over their businesses. So I think one in every 12 businesses actually gets sold. So there is a myriad of businesses out there that if you make friends with these people, or you make friends with your competition, and when they start to retire or leave, you're going to be the first person they reach out to and say, hey, I'm looking to sell, or I'm looking to get out. You know, will you take care of my employees after I'm gone? Or, you know, can you take over my book of business? And so you have such a huge opportunity to envelop all those other companies at the same time as you grow. It's a long-term play.
Yeah, it's just like a turnkey. It just happens. And all of a sudden that's on your books in 30 days. And as you said, everybody's winning in the process.
Yep.
Doing what you're doing, you have such huge vision. What is something that you still struggle with as a leader?
Ooh, my attitude.
I think your attitude has advantages.
Yeah, it has advantages in getting shit done. It doesn't have advantages in creating loyalty because it creates loyalty from fear, or at least did. I've been working on it quite heavily and being more calm and thinking in a way that, hey, yes, every employee, every person that comes to us, they don't mean to fuck up. They have a purpose of wanting to be here and growing. And so that's a big thing that I consistently need to focus on as a leader. The other thing is really that aggressive patience. I hate waiting for things. And every once in a while, you cannot purchase a time machine to go faster. And now that I have kids, I don't want to purchase a time machine to go faster because they grow so fucking fast. And I want to slow it down every single day I can. But that's one of the biggest things that I struggle with as a leader is realizing that people, they want to do good. They want to succeed. They will not have the drive that I have, but they will have the drive and the level of, you know, focus that is needed to help me to get to the next level. And then you just find the next person who has a little bit more of what you need to get to the next level and the next level and the next level. And so consistently realizing that. And then one thing I don't struggle with, but I think a lot of people struggle with, is that, look, ask for help or pretend like you're dumb. It's okay to totally pretend like you're an idiot and just ask questions over and over and over, whether that's Google or YouTube or ChatGTP or another business owner that you're like, hey, I don't know how to solve this. I don't know how to fix this problem. And that's not throwing your problems on other people. It's just like, hey, I don't know how to fix this little part of my business, or I don't know how to do this with my attitude, or did you read a book that helped you out? Because I see you succeeding in this, and that has helped and made the world of a difference when it comes to those things.
I think that's everything, like you say, being able to, first of all, see where your red flags are, see where your blind spots are. And then I also believe vicariously being a father has made that patience be more built into you, understanding that we have to fight certain battles, that we can't always get the kids to do what we need them to do at that time. That makes us understand, it's like, wow, this is precious. you were also saying how that you're pushing, and sometimes you achieve this thing and you don't acknowledge it and you move on. What I have found is that if I don't have presence to that thing, that's what I do. But I'm even now working on where when I accomplish something or have some sort of accolade or hit a certain level financially, I say, let me take a second. Let me actually digest this. Let me appreciate this. And that allows me to not feel like I just have to go, what's next? What's the next thing? Because there's always that drive. But for people that are hard chargers, pushing the brakes is often more difficult than hitting the gas.
Yeah. And it's definitely not pushing the brakes at all. It's pretty much just cruising in that moment. Yeah. And, you know, taking it in, breathing, and going back to the time when you lived in a, you know, foyer and you can eat top ramen and rice for every meal. And you're like, damn, it's not so bad looking around right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty successful. We're doing okay so far. And then, you know, getting back into it, but enjoying it. Absolutely. 100%.
How do you maintain integrity with yourself every day? What are your non-negotiables?
Oh, God. So my wife and I, we have date night every Friday night. That's a non-negotiable in our house. When it comes to everything else, I do not believe in the non-negotiable as much as internally, like what I need.
Yes.
I sacrifice what I need for other people in order to get shit done and what has to be done. That could be, you know, sacrificing some time at the gym. I was going to go to the gym today, but we had a meeting that came up emergency. And, you know, I took the meeting instead of going to the gym, which is fine. I can work my schedule around what other people need because I am the tip of the spear. So that means I go into the body first and I get the most bloody and damaged. And that's the purpose of being a leader in general and how I feel I need to be to succeed. And I want to be to succeed, quite honestly. So I don't have a lot of other non-negotiables in my life. I mean, obviously integrity when it comes to the number one problem that I have with people that just flips me into an absolute rage is lying. I don't care if you fucked up. I don't care if you did something horribly wrong. I don't care if you killed somebody. If you lie about it, then I will go into an absolute rage. But if you tell me, I'll just be like, okay, let's figure out how to bury the body sort of thing, you know? It's about accepting that. Yeah, it's that accountability, one of our core values, accepting that you did it, telling us so that we can fix it or put something in place that can fix it in the future. And that's in my life. That's with my wife. That's with my kids. That's with my business partner. That's with everybody. Just don't fucking lie. That's the biggest thing that sends me into an absolute rage. But other than that, you know, I'm making sure I have time for my wife and non-negotiable with that. And I'm working very hard, and it's super difficult to have non-negotiables with my kids as well, to have time for them every single day. I'm blessed to be able to put them to bed unless I'm out of town every single day, see them when they wake up every single day. So it's been a huge blessing to focus on them as well. And I live to show them what's possible. I don't live for them. So my wife and I still have date nights. We still go on vacations ourselves without the kids and things like that. We didn't change our lifestyle for them. Yeah. We want to show them what's possible in our lifestyle. And I make sure that I have a nanny and I pay for a nanny. I guess that's one of our non-negotiables as well, that we'll pay somebody to help us because we couldn't do it without help. My wife would go crazy or I would go crazy and the business would suffer. So those are probably the non-negotiables. But when it comes to everything else, I'm pretty fluid. It's not that I have non-negotiables. I got to work out every day and I got to drink 110 ounces of water and eat, you know, 7 almonds. Now I think that's unhealthy and that life is fucking bullshit for me. Might work for other people. Doesn't work for me. You got to be pliable in the world. And that pliability is what allows me to expand my knowledge and consistently read and change and, you know, spin things at the drop of a hat, where I'm not going to get into a rhythm of doing the same stuff over and over and over.
Now, Bruce Lee had that analogy of absorbing what is useful, discarding what is useless, and adding what is specifically your own. And as we go through different phases, seasons in our lives and our businesses, we have to be able to adapt in those capacities. And like you're saying too, we've been kind of around this, all this material that we're talking about, all these like entrepreneurial leadership. And there's a lot of people that we see that may play a certain game or they may look like a certain person, but then you find out it's like, that may not be who they say they are. Or like you said, the person that's saying, this is my non-negotiables for the day. Well, they may be trying to sell you their next program or their next book. And that's that. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. That's just not the way I want to do it. That's not the way you do it.
Exactly.
But we have to understand, buyer beware, if nothing else, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Find my 7-step procedure. I'd love to tell you, Marcus, but find it in my $99 ebook now that I'm just going to write. I have ChatGPT write and launch right after you launch this podcast. I'm launching it.
Tell us about what you think about AI, because I think you feel the same way I do.
Oh, I like it. So nothing. I think AI is absolutely phenomenal, but I do believe that it's not going to, it isn't to the point yet of replacing humanity when it comes to copywriting, when it comes to follow-ups, when it comes to really that human intuition and that human touch. Yes. It's getting better and better and better, and will continue to get better. And we use it in our systems. We use it in our processes. We use it to create things for us, because it does turn one person into 10 people. Really, right. When it comes to copywriting, when it comes to poster creation, when it comes to even commercial planning and that type of artistic form. And also when it comes to podcasts, it come up with a whole bunch of good podcast ideas that allow you to riff off. But there's still that humanity section where that's really what's going to set you apart as a business owner and as a leader, is that having that connection with humans, having that connection with people, until it grows smart enough to kill us all. But that being said, I like AI. I think it's great. I think it is an integral part of the future, and we use it in our companies because it allows us to really accelerate certain parts of our businesses much, much better. But as in terms of like high level copy or, you know, my posts or anything like that, I use it for medical research, but not really anything that really requires a connection or a human touch.
And that's what it is. We just have to recognize it for what it does and then use it for that thing. You recently bought yourself an automobile. Tell us about the significance of that and what it means to you, not just as like this thing.
So going back to my attitude, I bought my McLaren in a fit of rage and anger, because my my vehicle that I've owned for a long period of time is a little 2013 Scion FRS that I had built myself. And when you know anything about the built not bought world, you know that shit box blows up like every other week and you're constantly fixing it. So it left me stranded on the highway, and I limped it over to the side of the road, and I called a good friend of mine, and I know he bought and sold exotics and was in that world. And I said, "You look, man, I need a car like now." And within 30 minutes, I had bought a 2018 McLaren 720S. And I had always dreamt of having a garage full of cars. I wanted to be a car mechanic. I grew up watching all those, car shows, and I really wanted to be a mechanic. And my dad sat me down one day and said, "Look, you can either be a mechanic and maybe feed your family, or you can get a higher level degree and have a higher income and have a garage full of cars." And so that stuck with me, and it was great for my pathway and what I needed at the time. And it has allowed me now to get to that level where, you know, I did not feel like I had made it or I had done anything really worthwhile until I got that car. And it was just an eye-opening experience that I'm driving around in a vehicle that is worth more than my yearly income when I started this journey. And I had 4 other jobs and high-level physician jobs. And it was just eye-opening, whereas like all the bullshit, all the things that I had to go through, all the kicks in the nuts, it goes away when I sit in that car.
Yes.
And it was some people say, "Oh, well, that's not good for you." Well, it's for me, that's what drove me to get to this point. I want cars, and I want a garage full of them, and I want a nice house, and I want to be able to travel with my own plane anywhere we're going. And so that was a huge driver. And sitting in that, it just makes me smile, because I remember growing up and I built cars with my dad. I built cars with my grandfather. I've built cars since I've been a little kid in them, and having a machine that's just as amazing as it is, it's just an eye-opening and life-changing experience for me, where it's like, okay, I sit in that car and it's like, okay, I got to act like I'm at the next level now. It's time to go.
It becomes not just a symbol, but like you said, it literally becomes a driver, pardon the pun. But it, again, like you get out there, you sit in it, you're like, wow, I remember everything I did to get here. And now I also remember what I want to do to continue to move forward, to push myself to get there.
Yeah, it was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Doctor, I can't thank you for everything. If you have any parting words of advice for any young entrepreneurs or leaders, what would you tell them before we sign off and put a bow on this thing?
Always be the dumbest motherfucker in the room.
I love it.
Everybody always says be the hardest worker in the room. That's part of it. But always be the dumbest fucker in the room. You know, go into any room and pretend like you don't know anything. I walked into that first RHA Syndicate event and is filled with 50 entrepreneurs, and 49 of them made more money than me, and 49 of them had less degrees than I had. And so I went in there and I learned whatever I could, however I could, and brought value to them in the only way I knew how to bring value at that time, which was, you know, diet and exercise plans. And I did that to for whoever I could for free. And I made a lot of friends doing that and was able to have some business partners by the end of that first year. And now I've never forgotten that in any room I go into. I always pretend like I'm the dumbest person there. Like I'm just there to learn as much as possible. Even if I'm speaking at an event, I write notes meticulously, and now everything's digital. So I write notes digitally in my, I use Obsidian, which is a note taking system, but I am consistently putting myself into a situation where I am the dumbest person in the room, even with my staff, and allowing them to come up with ideas and thoughts and things that can improve our business and has improved and changed our business significantly. So that's one thing I really recommend as entrepreneurs is never think that you're finished learning, and then applying that as much as possible, breaking it, getting up, thinking what you can do better, going in that direction and breaking it again. And you're consistently going to be failing on your way to the top.
Love that. Where can we learn more about you? Where can we follow you? Where can we learn about your businesses and all your stuff you got going on? Tell us all the things, Doc.
Right. On so I hang out at dralexspinoso.com. So dralexspinoso.com. Instagram is just same thing, Dr. Alex Spinoso, same thing on Facebook. And our company, our major company, is called Genesis Lifestyle Medicine. So we do weight loss, hormone therapy across the country in all 50 states. And we've been growing like crazy and really excited to see you guys.
I'm just so happy to get to talk to you, and seeing your journey is inspiring to say the least. Thank you for your time and what you're doing with your work.
Thank you for having me, Marcus.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Okta Nonverba. If this message resonates with you, please share it out with others on social media. Hit that subscribe button and leave a review for the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. To learn more, please go to MarcusAureliusAnderson.com and join his Okta Nonverba Inner Circle to get exclusive content, news, and information. Until next time, remember, talk is cheap. Live your life based on actions, not words.